Hello, Twins fans. This is John Swole with another interview from the Twins' wonderful past. Today we have the pleasure of speaking with former Twins second baseman Sam Perlazzo. Sam was signed by the Twins as a free agent in August of 1972 and made his major league debut at Comiskey Park on September 13, 1977. So let's see what Sam has to say. Sam, you were born in Cumberland, Maryland. Is that where you grew up?
I was. Okay. Sure did.
What was your favorite sport growing up?
Well, I'll tell you, I probably liked baseball better than anything, but, you know, being up in Western Maryland, trying to get to play ball in good weather was a little tougher than you'd think. I ended up playing football and was probably more known in the area as a football player than I was a baseball player early on. I did pretty well in high school as a running back and safety. Of course, the baseball team played about 15 games, so you know you could go into a slump for that long. But it came down to whether, you know, my parents could afford to send us all, you know, I had three boys, send us all to school. And I thought maybe I could get a football scholarship, but my heart was always in baseball. And, you know, after all, tons of letters of interest, you know, all the big schools, I think, kind of decided not to get a scholarship because I wasn't a very big kid at the time. So I decided to go ahead and pursue baseball and was fortunate enough to get a scholarship at George Washington University and went on from there.
You played baseball at George Washington from 70 to 72, and apparently you were the star of the team in 72. You hit .345, and you led the nation in stolen bases.
Well, I had a pretty good year. It was the stolen base thing is a percentage basis, I think, and since we didn't play as many games. But I had a good time at George Washington. We didn't really have a stadium. We played down at the Ellipse on a wide open field. Caught in the White House, had a game stopped several times with the presidential helicopter landing and people walking across the field. But, you know, when you're playing baseball and that's your love, it doesn't matter where you play as long as you get to play.
That's for sure. Was your team pretty good?
We had pretty good teams. You know, one of the things that really turned me on with the school was the fact that they would have a southern road trip. And, of course, you know, we hadn't been hardly outside at all in D.C., and then we go down, and I remember one specific trip where we played North Carolina, NC State, Wilmington, Davidson, South Carolina. You know, we're going in there 0-0, and most of those teams were like 9-3 or 11-1 or so it was fun, though. It was a great experience, and looking back, I competed very well in our division, I thought.
Okay. The Minnesota Twins signed you as an amateur free agent on August 15th, 1972. What do you remember about that day?
Well, I'll tell you how it happened was I had gone down and, since you didn't get to play much during as much as you'd like, during the high school season, I started when I was a senior and went down into the Shenandoah Valley League. And at the time, there was three major leagues. I think it was the Basin League, the Cape Cod, and the Valley League. Now there's tons of them. But at that point, that was a big college league. So I went down there and played in the summer. For three different summers, I played in Newmarket and Waynesboro. But this particular time, I had gone down and I was playing for Newmarket, and after one of the ball games when a Minnesota Twin Scout came up, I didn't really know who it was. Fun enough, I wanted to play ball, and I said, well, of course I do. And he told me, I asked him who he was, he told me it was Ed Dunn from Minnesota Twins, and I said, you know, I have a tryout that I had told the Phillies that I was going to, they invited me up to Philadelphia to work out for a game, and which was at the end of my senior year, and our junior year of college. So he told me he could just, you know, walk away and forget about it. And I said, well, sir, you don't do that. I said, I made this team a promise. office I'm going to hold up to my end of the bargain. So I ended up going up to Philadelphia, worked out, and they knew I had a full scholarship, and I guess they just weren't prepared to give me enough money to sign me to pay for my scholarship and me. So I went back home, told everyone I was going back to school, and sure enough, Ed then called back and wondered how I did and offered me a contract, and 49 it became good enough to sign, and that's how it happened.
Wow.
I went back to school the next semester. Next two semesters, actually. Went back in the fall, and then I had to student teach, and ended up having to do a couple of papers in spring training to finish my degree.
Yeah, but you got your degree, though, huh?
Oh, yeah. I wasn't going to not do that.
Okay. Baseball Reference has you playing in the Yankee farm system in 1973, and in 1974 and 75, the teams you played for had, or appear to list, no major league affiliation. What was going on there?
Well, what was happening in my first year, I played in Fort Lauderdale Yankees, but it was a co-op team comprised of two organizations. It was the Yankees and the Twins set players.
I see.
To go off the club, so I actually wore a Yankee uniform, but I was with the Twins, so the Yankees and Twins supplied players. And the following 2 years, the next year I was in Dubuque, Iowa, and that was a total co-op team. It was about six or seven clubs supplied players, so I never wore a Twin uniform again. And the third year I went out to Reno in the California League and was with the Reno Silver Sox, that was comprised of the San Diego Padres and Minnesota Twins. So it wasn't until the following year that I went to Double A with the Twins that I actually got to wear a Twins uniform during the season.
That's kind of unusual.
It was, and you know, I don't feel fortunate that I was able to hang in there. You know, a lot of times you're supplying guys shuffling out to co-op teams that you're not. They're on the bubble for something like that, you know, and the other guys are in the same league, possibly in the same class league, are going somewhere else. So it was different, but it was still baseball, and it was pro baseball, and that's all I cared about.
Yep. In 76, you were with the Twins Orlando AA club, and in 77, you had a great year in AAA Tacoma, and you were called up by the Twins that September. How did you find out you were getting the call to the big leagues?
Well, actually, funny story was, Tom Kelly and I were roommates, and then he ended up taking over the team. The last half of the season as a manager.
Okay.
And TK told us we were going to make the playoffs. Our team was going to be in the playoffs, and he told us that we would be, at the end of the season, we would be going up to the Major League Club. So my roommate ended up telling me that with the manager, which turns out to be one of the best that Minnesota ever had.
Absolutely. So you've known Tom Kelly for a long time.
I think it was 78. We were both in, where did we go in 78?
Was that the Tacoma team?
Was it Toledo or when was I in Toledo?
Not too sure.
That was after. That was afterwards. It was like 78, I think.
You made your major league debut on September the 13th, 1977, at Comiskey Park against the White Sox. Late in the game, you did not get an at bat that day. But how do you remember that day?
Well, you know, I was an older guy called up. I was probably 26, 27, and just, you know, to me, little kid from Cumberland, Maryland, that busted his butt and seemed to do all the little things, and I look back and say, you know, these guys are pretty good players. I don't know if I can play with them. And then I thought that every ball hit the big leagues was hard, and everyone made all the plays. And when I got up there, I saw it differently. But at the same time, I knew these guys were good. And I was just kind of, I was walking on air, and of course, feeling my way around. Didn't want to do anything wrong. Wanted to be ready, whatever. I, you know, candy store. I'll be honest with you, I was just tickled to death.
I think that would be true for everybody. You had 27 plate appearances with the Twins that September, and you hit 292. But in 1978, you found yourself in AAA Toledo. What, was that a big letdown?
It was in a way. I didn't. I had a real good spring, and actually, Gene Mock had come up to me. I was one of the last guys cut, but I had a good spring. But, you know, I knew what he did. You know, he liked to. He had Rob Wilfong, who was a good player, and Bobby Randall was a good player, and he liked to platoon him a little bit. And basically, he came up to me and told me that he didn't think I was a platoon player yet. And that I shouldn't go down there, and he said if something happens to, you know, Bobby Randall, that I would be the guy that gets called up. You know how those things go. That, you know, they were both doing pretty well as far as I can recall, and I just for me, I'm gonna play hard. It was not an excuse for me not to play well. You know, I was there to play well no matter what it took, and I knew that. So you know, it was a letdown a little bit, but at the same time I was still playing ball and I still had a taste of the big leagues. I knew they liked me and I just was gonna go out and, you know, be ready in case they needed me.
Yeah. On March 30th, 1979, the Twins released you. Was that a shock, or did you look on that as a new opportunity?
Well, actually, it was kind of a, I won't say a mutual thing, but it was one of those things where I went in and they were aware of the fact that if I wasn't going to make their major league club, that I'd like a chance someplace else.
Okay.
So, you know, and in the course of the way things go, they kind of did me a favor and allowed me to go ahead and get a chance someplace else. We, you know, I moved on from there.
You signed with the San Diego Padres shortly after the Twins let you go, and you spent most of the year at AAA Hawaii, and you were a September call-up, albeit for only two appearances, I think. What was it like to play baseball in Hawaii?
Well, first of all, it was great. We had that new stadium out there. You know, you're in Honolulu, and you can't beat, you know, the weather and that kind of thing. The problem was that you had very long homestands and very long road trips.
Yep.
You know, when you went on the road sometimes, it was 3 weeks at a time. You know, you'd have to fly 5 hours just to get to the coast, and then, you know, a couple hours before you got your next connection, and then try to fly to the next city. So the travel was not very good that particular way, but it's AAA baseball in the Pacific Coast League, and playing in Hawaii, you know, I don't think anyone can knock that.
Yeah, that's for sure.
It was a new chance for me, so I was lucky enough that the manager there was my AA manager, and when I was with the Twins.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Dick Phillips.
Okay. The following season, 1980, you played in Japan for the Yakult Swallows. How did you end up in Japan, and how did you enjoy playing there?
Well, actually, you know, when I was playing in, I think it was Hawaii at the time, and Steve Bry was my roommate, and he had a book, I think it was Chrysanthemum at the Bat, and his goal at that point in time was to try to get to Japan, and I'm sitting there going, why would you want to do that, you know, and, you know, I'm like, where is that anyway? but what I didn't know is I think the teams, a lot of the Japanese teams with zero in them guys that played for Hawaii at the time because they felt like that was a the style of life over there, you would be more adaptable to playing in Japan. And you know, at the end of the season, actually when I was a call up at the end of that year, I had actually hurt my groin in the playoffs before we got called up. And then when I got called up, I had a slight groin pull, but you couldn't really tell. There was a lot of things going on that I could still do, but so it didn't seem like it was bad. And sure enough, in the first game I started, I ended up tearing the thing and got carried off of Dodger Stadium on a stretcher. So that's why I only had two at bats. And, you know, but at that point in time, that was a major disappointment. I knew I had tears of eyes coming off the field on that one. I couldn't even get up. It was that winter that I rehabbed all winter thinking I had a shot to make that club. And then general manager called me and told me there was another team interested in me. And, you know, at that point, I don't really care. I figured if some team is interested in me, that's good. And I said, well, that's good. Who is it? And he said, Japan. And I think I fell off my chair. My agent at the time was Ron Capiro, and I think I was his first guy he ever negotiated a contract with over in Japan. And, you know, the money at the time for what I had made in AAA and all the years in the minor leagues was substantially more. And I didn't want to leave the States, but for a family standpoint and financial standpoint, I had to go.
Okay.
That was a scary ride over there, I can tell you that. It felt like you're never going to get home again. But it was different. You know, it was different. At the same time, you know, it's baseball. You can only play it so many ways. And, it was quite an experience, something I'll never forget.
Do you think it's just as difficult for an American player to play in Japan as it is for a Japanese player to play here?
I would think so, yes. I mean, at the time I went over there, we only had two Americans per team. So you were allowed. They had an interpreter. I would assume that the Japanese player coming over here might have a little better chance of reading. You know, you can never read anything over there. At least I couldn't even. I don't know how you could read those kanji symbols. So that part was the most difficult part. You know, learning the language wasn't easy. But you know, you got phrases and stuff from your interpreter and got you where you're going and what you needed and directions and things like that. And the rest of the time on the field, he was around, so you know, he took care of that part of it. But yeah, I mean, you're away from your home. You're in another country. You don't speak the language. It's different. There's no question about it. But, you know, it's like I said, when you step out on the field, your ball's got to cross the plate, and you still got to swing and hit it, and you got to pitch it, and you got to catch it. So it's still baseball.
Yeah. Were you alone, or did you have any of your family members with you?
I had my wife and little daughter with me at the time, and of course she was a little blonde-haired girl, so she was a big hit over there.
That's
I fit right in, though. I was short and had dark hair, so.
In 1981, you ended up with the New York Mets organization, and you played in AAA Tidewater. But after that season, your playing career was over at the age of 30. Was it time for you to leave the playing career behind and move on, or would you have preferred to keep playing?
Well, actually, you know what happened was I came back from Japan, and I had played well over there, and I thought, you know what? I'm not ready to take the uniform off. Why don't you give it? You can get yourself a job and give it one more shot. I was signed by the Mets to be a player coach with the stipulation that they knew I wanted to play. And somehow in that translation, I ended up doing more coaching. Like when I went in spring training, I thought I would be fielding grounders, taking bat practice, and competing for a job, basically. And then, you know, when I wasn't playing, if I wasn't playing, I was going to help coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that I was more of a coach than I was a player. And at that point in time, you know, I played, I think I had about 80 bats or something, and most of those were like, I was coaching third base and not taking batting practice, not fielding grounders, and then someone like, you know, he says, all right, you're active tonight. And then trying to get the timing and, you know, back and forth. I was back and forth on the DL kind of like thing. Just trying to, so me a job, not chucking.
You ended up coaching in the Mets organization from 82 to 86, and you never had a losing season. What was it like to be a minor league manager?
Well, I'll tell you what, it was fun. It really was fun. It was a challenge. I just happened to be in an organization, you know, running at their peak. I think it was one of those situations where our minor league system, the Mets, was extremely talented. A lot of prospects up and down the system. And the organization seemed to move their people along, you know, step by step. So I don't think I could have had it any better. I had great general manager and farm directors and ownership, and our clubs were good, our players were good, and each year we got to move up a step, and it was really good. I mean, we had good players, and everywhere we went, we got to move people along, and we made trades for big league people that helped our major league club, and it was a good time for the New York Mets at that point.
Okay. You then stepped up to coaching in the big leagues from 87 to 2005 with the Mets, the Reds, the Mariners, and the Orioles. Finally, in 2005, about two-thirds of the way through the season, you took over as the Baltimore Orioles skipper after Lee Mazzilli was let go. Tell us what went through your mind as you took on your first big league managing job. You mentioned Leo Mazzoni earlier. You're a friend of his, and you persuaded him to come over there as the pitching coach. Just couldn't get over the hump, and in 2007, after managing the Orioles for 286 games, the Orioles let you go, and Dave Tremblay took over as the manager. Everyone says that managers are hired to be fired, but what's it like to be dismissed from a job that you worked so hard to get for so many years?
I wish I was the one that could turn that organization around.
Yeah. In 2008, you were again coaching for the Mariners, and in 2009, you moved over to Philly as the coach, and you're still there today. You have now been in a major league coach or manager for 25 straight years. What brings you back year after year?
I love the game. I mean, I look at people that go to work every day that don't like to go to work every day.
Yep.
Don't like their job, and I have the opportunity to go to work. Enjoy what I do, if you want to call that work. I'd say the biggest part of the job that makes it work is that if you mess up, you got to read the name in the paper the next day. Or every other person, you don't have to worry about that.
Yep.
It's just a great game. It's fun. It's challenging. At the same time, people come to watch you. 50,000 people come to watch you work every night.
The Phillies manager is Charlie Manuel, another ex-Minnesota Twin. What is Charlie like as a manager?
Charlie's, he allows his coaches to coach. Not only does he allow them to coach, he expects them to coach. I mean, he doesn't bother you dang in your business, or if you didn't do your job, he'd be in your business, but... I wish I would have coached under Charlie before I managed, because I like the way he controls his clubhouse and he controls his team, and I think I learned something from all of them. But he's he lets you play too, you know, he lets you express your talents, and at the same time he has great respect for the baseball game. I don't know that there's anybody that loves baseball that I've met any more than he does. And I think that's a tremendous asset, what you're going doing, what he's doing. And he's just fun to be around.
Great. What do you enjoy most about coaching or managing?
Well, you know, I'm an infield coach. And I've been an infield coach for a lot of years, and then I'm a base running coach now. I took over for Davey Loves, so you know what for me is I love challenges. Like Ryan Howard was a challenge coming over here. They wanted me to help him with his defense, and you know, the fact was that we worked really hard, improved his defense, you know, 500% on the first year. Those are, and to see the gratitude that he had, knowing that he was, you know, had gotten better, and the enjoyment he got out of it just makes me, you know, put a big smile on my face. And it's those kind of challenges that keeps me coming back every day.
Okay. Is Ryan Howard going to be ready for the season opener?
I don't think so. Yeah. I haven't seen him, but I don't think so. I don't think he's done any baseball activities yet.
Hmm. So he's definitely going to miss him.
Yeah, well, we'll see where we've been a very resilient club over the years I've been there. We've missed Jimmy Rollins every year, Chase Utley every year. We have had probably, if someone would take the time to look it up, probably more injuries than any team out there over the last 3 years, and continue to get better. They amaze me.
Well, you got a pretty nice pitching staff over there.
Yeah, we got those three good starters. You know, we don't have Oswald in there. And hopefully our kid Worley will hit like he did in the second half of the season for us. And Joe Blanton gets back to his health. So it's a tougher division this year. The Miami got tougher. Washington is scares you. Atlanta's always good. So I think it's one of the best divisions now coming up this year than any of them.
I agree. That whole Miami, the Florida situation is going to be interesting to watch, too.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot tougher to win that thing this year. and you know, a team that wins it might not win 95 anymore.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Is managing in the big leagues again something that you're striving for, Sam?
I'm not actively out there, campaigning for something like that. In the right situation, I think I would enjoy it again. You know, I think the key to that is having a good time managing and working at that is if your front office and your ownership group are with you, they're up front with you, then I think you can go out there and do the best you can, and then know that if something's you don't have to be a scientist to figure out when you're doing a good job, when you aren't, when you should be, and when you shouldn't be. So as long as the organization understands that, gives you a little time, then that would be a good situation. You know you're going to get fired after a certain amount of time, and no matter what you do.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Sam, you've been in the big leagues off and on since 1977. If you could change one thing about baseball, what would it be?
Right now, I think they ought to. We should both be the DH, and we should both be using the pitcher to hit. I think you need to unify the two leagues, myself.
Do you
play a balanced schedule, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Do you like the DH?
I like them both, actually. So which way you'd go, if you'd ask me, and I'd have a hard time telling you which way. They both have their merits. The DH can keep people in the big leagues that normally wouldn't be playing because they can hit. And I think there's a value to that, it's just a difficult situation.
Yeah. The Twins signed you, and you were in their organization for 6 seasons. What are some of your best memories of being a Minnesota Twin?
Well, probably one of my fondest is when I got to the big leagues in 77, and it was the year the Twins were flirting with the playoffs, and also the year Rod Carew was flirting with 400.
Okay.
And so when we got called up, we pretty much knew we were probably not going to play a whole lot until they were either eliminated or it looked like they were going to get eliminated from playoffs. And then the last game of the season that year, I think we went in with Lyman Bostock had 199 hits, needed one for 200. I think Dave Gulch had 19 wins, needed one for 20. And Rod Carew was a 7-time American League batting champion. He had 99 RBIs and needed one for 100 first time in his career. And we were playing Milwaukee, and I looked at the lineup, and I was hitting second, and Lyman was hitting first, and Rod was hitting third, and I thought to myself, boy, oh boy, oh boy, if Lyman gets on, I better get this butt down, or my butt is really in trouble. And as fate would have it, Lyman never got on, and I remember making 3 outs and coming back. I played it with Bill Travers was pitching against us, so he had that split-fingered fastball. And after making 3 outs, I come in the dugout, and Gene Mock called me aside, and he says, Sam, he says, I want you to watch this guy. He says, when he pushes his fingers in there, when he throws a split, he flares his glove out. And when he doesn't, you know it's a fastball. And I'm thinking, my goodness gracious. Wonder if you'd have told me that 3 at bats ago. And sure enough, I went up and my next at bat, and I didn't see him clear his glove, so I was sitting on the gear, and I hit a ball up the left center field wall for a triple. And Rod came up and got a base hit and got his 100th RBI. And to this day, we're still teasing each other about it. He told me at the end of the game that next year when you make the club, you're going to get dinner with champagne and works. And I've yet to collect.
Yeah.
So I think we're down to McDonald's, he told me.
That's a great story, though. So, you know, you touched on how the Phillies were going to do this year. What do you see? You think that they're going to be good enough to win the pennant?
You know, I think so. I mean, you know, our top three pitchers are darn good. There's no question about it. You know, I think more importantly this year, because of the strength of the division, I think it becomes more important for us to stay healthy. We've yet to do that since I've been there. You know, we're going to start out with behind the eight ball without Ryan Howard for a month or two. So I think it's imperative that we stay healthy this year. And I think if we do, yeah, we can compete for the division. Yeah.
Okay. Sam, what do you enjoy doing in your spare time?
Well, actually, baseball is such a grind. When I get home, I enjoy being home, you know, for that time after being away all along. I like to play some golf. And I like to kick back, you know. I got a new granddaughter, my first one.
Great.
I've been visiting with her. I get together with a bunch of my buddies that I don't see all during the year. Either coach with me during, you know, it's amazing about four or five of them coach with me and still live in the area, so it's fun getting together with them. Just hanging out, you know, hanging out.
Yep.